Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
Kyrie Irving apologizes to LeBron James.
Non-story.
It's not a non-story. Kyrie even said, this is a big deal to me because I had to call Bron. Not LeBron. Not LeBron James. Not my former teammate. Oh, I had to call Bron. Even that is some love.
You know what's great?
Right? Kyrie throwing love. All right, here's the sound.
I'll tell you one thing, and obviously this is something that it was a big deal for me because I had to call Bron, you know, and tell him, like, you know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his, you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to the championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that, and, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people, and Bron was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship, and it was hard for him, and sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world.
Did you hear that? Did you listen to that, Rob Parker? Let me hit on a few things, and then I'm going to give you the floor because I know you want to rant. Number one, that was a message to Kyrie's young teammates that he said aren't ready to win. It was a message of, hey, guys, I was where you at. I get it. I understand. You think you know everything. You think you don't have to listen to the older guy. So he's trying to get them to listen to him because I don't think they appreciated him calling them out. Jaylen Brown even said as much when he came out the next day and was like, hey, it's all of us, not just the young guys. And here's the other thing that Kyrie has to battle in that locker room. Don't tell me that in the backs, if not the middle or the front of their minds in that Celtics locker room, they're not thinking, yo, Kyrie, we know you the man. We know you got crazy handles and you the best player on this team individually without question. But, bruh, we came within one game of the NBA Finals without you. We played better without you. The ball was moving better without you. So don't tell us we don't know how to win because all of us are learning, including you. And so that was the first thing. The second thing is what was not even considered a remote possibility 2 days ago, 3 days ago, a reunion with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving wasn't even on anyone's radar. And I'm not saying it's going to happen. Don't get me wrong. Don't go out there and say, oh, Chris Broussard said Kyrie's going to the Lakers. I'm not saying that.
Relax.
But what I am saying is it is now a possibility. What 3 days ago was not a remote possibility is now within the realm of possibility. And I think it actually could make a lot of sense. Rob Parker, I know you don't agree.
I could not disagree more.
It's not even a possibility.
Because,
is that what
because
you're saying?
Not even a possibility because he didn't say, I regret asking for a trade away from LeBron.
If you know how to
okay,
read between
no,
lines.
No, what he said was talking to the younger players who had a little pushback, got their panties in a bunch because he called them out. So this was a way to show them that he was once one of those guys and he didn't always get it. And that it was a very mature thing to do. It really was.
To apologize, to call LeBron?
To call LeBron.
I'm told.
It's very mature.
I'm told from good sources that it was genuine. Very mature. I give Kyrie credit.
It's a mature thing, so I like that.
But why'd he do it?
But because maybe he was trying to soften the blow, especially when those guys really got worked up over what he was saying to them. And I think he was saying, I was once one of you guys when he came to Cleveland. Do you know what I mean? And he was trying to get things. So it all fits. I get that. I really think that it tells you a lot about how deep and real Kyrie is. Because you don't have to do that. You don't have to make it public.
He made it. The thing, though. You don't want to even entertain the possibility
of him playing again with LeBron. I don't believe that at all. I think this is the NBA media hype machine. Hold on, Chris. First of all, media aren't even saying it. I'm saying it. Just hear me out. No matter who becomes available, everybody is going to play with LeBron. No matter Chris, Kyrie. Oh, wait a minute. San Antonio's dumb. He's going to the Lakers anyway, so they might as well trade him. Why don't they trade him there? Then it's like, okay, Jimmy Butler's name comes up, or whoever, Anthony Davis, whoever comes available or says anything is automatically linked to LeBron because everybody knows he can't win by himself. So
who has won by himself? I mean, be fair, has anybody won by themselves? That's not what I'm saying.
Right. That he can't win with the team that he has. So everybody's always trying to find his suitor. I got news for you. Kyrie couldn't win with LeBron either the last two times. They lost they lost 8 out of 9 games to the Warriors.
Yeah, the last four, Kyrie was gone.
When? Oh, right.
So they lost 4 out of 5. First of all, if he went to the Lakers, we're getting way ahead of
ourselves. They lost twice with Kyrie, and my thing is...
No, well, the first time Kyrie was hurt.
Right, but
they may have won that series.
But they lost.
They were up 2-1 without Kevin Love and Kyrie.
Kyrie averaged 28 points, and LeBron averaged a triple-double, and they lost 4-1. I'm talking about...
Right. But you could argue this supporting cast in L.A. might be better than what they had in Cleveland.
I'm not buying that. Have you watched them against the Knicks and the Cavaliers? I'm not buying it. I just don't believe that Kyrie's going to play with him. What Kyrie went through, and you know this, Chris, what bothered him the most is after they won a title, he wanted to bring Chris Paul.
I never heard that. That's the story I heard. This is what I heard.
That's what I heard.
That, first of all, LeBron and Kyrie never had a big argument or blow up themselves. Kyrie used to help LeBron in drills work on his handle. Kyrie would be at LeBron's house on occasion, at least once, talking about business, learning from LeBron about your businesses off the court. And now Kyrie is trying to put together a media company. Okay, so their relationship was okay. I'm not going to paint it like it was great because Kyrie in Cleveland was to himself. He's like coming in, playing ball, and then pretty much with his own people. Okay, so I'm not trying to paint that they were best friends. But they never had a blow up. One of the things, there was many, but one of the things that happened was Kyrie got wind that there was a three-way trade involving Paul George where Kyrie would have got shipped to Phoenix, Paul George would have went to the Cavs, and Phoenix would have sent a draft lottery pick and somebody else to Indiana. And he looked at it like, hold on, there's no way this is being discussed and LeBron doesn't know about it. So Kyrie jumped to the conclusion. Now, LeBron denies that he knew anything about it.
You think they're making deals without LeBron knowing? I don't think it was a deal.
I think it was talk. I think there's talk without LeBron. And I think if it gets to a point where we're going to do it, then you go to LeBron.
I definitely don't think
LeBron was sitting there with David Griffin when you're talking about trade possibilities.
See, and the other thing that to me.
But my point, let me finish the story. Kyrie jumped to the conclusion that LeBron had to be involved in it, didn't go to LeBron to say, yo, what's up? He just went to Griffin and said, get me out of here. That's how it happened.
He's spending time at his house. They're going over stuff, but he doesn't feel compelled to ask LeBron on what's going on.
Well, no. That wasn't the same days at LeBron's house.
No, but I'm just saying.
But yeah, that's what, yeah.
But that doesn't make sense to me that you don't have a relationship just to even ask. If they told me that they were going to bring in Doug Gottlieb to be on the Odd Couple, I would say, Chris. That's you and me.
I agree. He should have went to LeBron.
That doesn't make sense why you wouldn't. That tells you about their relationship.
I'm not saying they were good enough.
I understand.
But it was never like, you know what I mean? A blow up.
When you go in and you demand to get out and you tell some people, if you don't do it, I'm going to have surgery so I won't play. That's a guy who desperately wanted to get away from LeBron. I do not, N-O-T, see any circumstance where he's coming back.
Why would he have to say, I apologize? He didn't say about leaving.
He's saying about being a young player who didn't accept maybe his guidance early. That's what he said. He didn't say he apologized for leaving.
Look, that never even came up. Rob, I am with you in that. I'm not saying Kyrie is coming to L.A. What I am saying is it's a possibility now.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we're talking about former NBA coach and general manager and now a Turner Sports NBA analyst. It's none other than Stu Jackson. Stu, welcome to The Odd Couple.
Hey, guys, thanks so much for having me, man. Long-time listener. First time
home. When Stu coached the Knicks, I was one of the beat writers back then in those days, Stu, remember?
Stu, how was he? Did he get on your nerves? I'm sure he did.
No, he didn't get on my nerves. He was very professional, very knowledgeable, and he killed me, Chris.
That's what he does. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, Stu,
his motto.
If I'm writing, I'm ripping. That's my motto.
Well, Stu, let's get right to it. I saw your tweet last night. Breaking news. I'm reading it now. Breaking news, 3-bomb. The Brooklyn Nets and Houston Rockets have just collectively attempted 100 three-point shots in a game. This three-point shooting epidemic needs a cure. # competition committee, # NBA, # basketball caretakers. I'm with you, but tell me what you meant. Like, what sparked you to send out that tweet?
Well, actually, Chris, it's something I've talked about on air. I've talked about it on my podcast. And last night sent me over the edge. When you had two teams combined with over 100 three-point shooting attempts and half of all the shots taken in the game, understanding it was an overtime game, it's getting to be too much. And I feel from a basketball standpoint purely, the three-point shot as it relates to the game is at a tipping point.
I say that...
Because I don't want to sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. Listen, scoring's up 4 points a game over last year, and it's the highest jump in a one-year jump in 20 years, okay? The NBA is in its golden years. Fan support and enthusiasm at its all-time high. It's an exciting shot. I get all that, but we've really lost a major parts of the game of basketball.
I agree with you. It's the game is hard for me to watch in current state. There's not a lot of defense going on. And then, Stu, there are some things where you talk about fan support and whatnot where we've seen the ratings, and sometimes it's been blamed on LeBron moving to the West, but the TNT ratings are down 26%. ESPN's ratings are down. I know people still come to the games, but are they enjoying these high-scoring, lack of defense games?
Well, I think the proof will be as we go forward here, Rob. I mean, we'll see. But I think it's incumbent upon the NBA to be proactive from a rule standpoint to maybe try to alter the way the game is played. And what you're alluding to is that are we not watching a game that's very homogenous?
Right.
Everyone plays the same way.
Right.
Except for maybe, Memphis. Except for maybe San Antonio at times, but every team, every offensive scheme seems to be the same. It's handoff, it's cut, it's pick and roll after pick and roll, or in the case of Houston, a lot of unassisted threes where we just dribble in to three-point shots. And I just wonder from a spacing standpoint, from the aesthetics, from the number of variety of plays that usually occur in the game, if we're just not seeing something that's the same all the way around with every team. And that's my issue. I mean, look, the three-point shot is a great shot. It's exciting. But do we have to have it the entire game? And my suggestion has been, why not do one of two things? Cut the three-point line off at the corners. Just have an arc at 23-9 across the court, and you have no corner three. Or just make the three-point shot a scoring three at certain parts of the game, Chris. Rob, maybe at the last 2 minutes of each quarter, maybe at the last 2 minutes of each half in the overtime, but something to bring some variety back into the game of basketball.
I love your first point. It's something I've been saying as well. Basically eliminate that corner three. And I think what that would do, Stu, for the listeners out there who might not be thinking about it, that would necessitate the return of post play and the mid-range shot. Because you wouldn't be able to plant four guys on the three-point line because it would only be so long, right? So you would have a variety of offenses and ways to score now.
Correct. And I still think even with the arc, the spacing would still be the same. In other words, you'd still get a space floor that's available for cutting and driving and penetrating and dishing. But at least it would add that not only the low post game, but give some credibility to a mid-range game as well. And not being able to shoot that corner three.
Right. It's the iCouple. We're joined by former NBA coach and general manager and also longtime worked for the NBA in the front office of the league, Stu Jackson. Check out his podcast on iTunes. It's called Everything Basketball. Everything Basketball. Stu, are there other people, you know, as you said, caretakers of the game? I don't want you to name names necessarily, but are there other people as concerned about this as you are? Because, like you said, ratings, I guess maybe ratings are a little down, but the game is as popular as ever. I mean, it's just growing by leaps and bounds. Are they just happy with that, or are there really people that feel like, look, we have to keep an eye on this and maybe make some changes?
Anytime that the NBA, and I know this from experience, makes a strategic move with respect to the game, there has to be a business reason connected with it. And right now, there's no business reason to get rid of the three-point shot for all the reasons we just talked about. It's exciting, the ratings are up, you know, the stands are being filled. But I just am trying to, you know, alert people that we got to get out ahead of this, because I love the NBA basketball. We're in a great time in the game, but at some point, do fans, educated fans, get to a point where they go, you know, it's the same thing, you know, they're jacking up threes, they're running around, the perception is no defense is being played, they take a fast break, and instead of going to the rim, they step back to the corner. I don't know if that's the best thing for the game. As a fan, I would say that. So right now, it's not an issue. I'm just saying, as someone who loves the game, do you get out ahead of this and maybe do something a little bit more strategic and interesting in terms of adjusting the rules?
And we know how it goes in sports. All these leagues are copycat leagues, okay? So the Warriors have success. They see it. Everybody decides. But everybody doesn't have a Steph Curry or a Klay Thompson, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody didn't have those players, but yet they still play like that, whereas before you would have the Knicks had a different style and the Pistons had a different style and Phoenix Suns played differently. You know what I mean? You played with what you had. And that's what you're right, Stu. We don't see that anymore, and it stinks.
It does. And, guys, I mean, let's you know, you bring up a good point. Let's switch sports. I mean, tell me you don't watch the NFL right now and think, man, everybody just
throwing the ball up. Yep.
And they throw the ball every down.
Right.
I mean, for me now, I don't know football. I'm a casual football fan, and I sit there and I go, man, this is kind of boring, man. Everybody does the same thing. And I don't want to see that happen to NBA or collegiate basketball.
Yeah, and you mentioned baseball. Like, it's all home runs and strikeouts. Nobody, a lot of this is the analytics.
Right. The analytics have really altered sports now, because things that they used to do, stealing bases in baseball and bunting people over, they won't do it.
Right.
It's a home run or nothing.
Yeah, but here, you know, analytics are great. I think they're great at proving a point or disproving a point. But, you know, Steve Kerr said it the best, guys, with respect to the three-point shot. Is that, yes, from an offensive efficiency standpoint, the three-point shot is a more efficient shot. But he said, look, the more twos that you score, in other words, when you shoot a higher percentage, that just means you don't have to defend the fast break as much. With threes, you're shooting a much lower percentage. And now defensively, you're defending the fast break more.
Right.
But if you shoot a higher percentage shot, you're defending the fast break less. And he said his preference is to defend less fast break. And that's why the Warriors, as much as they shoot the three, they're one of the best mid-range teams in the league.
I was going to say, I'm glad you brought up the Warriors, because people think they just hoist threes like Houston. No, they get backdoor layups. They shoot mid-range shots. They don't shoot the three nearly as much as people seem to think they do.
No, perception there is not the reality.
Right, right. Well, Stu, great
man.
Stuff. We really appreciate it, and I'm with you. I think the league has to really keep an eye on this and get out in front of it. So great job.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
And, Stu, you know, you were very lucky that you didn't have Chris Broussard as a beat writer when you were coaching, so it all works out.
Why I wouldn't have ripped you as much as Rob, I'll tell you that much. All right, Stu. And remember,
Chris. Hey, yep. Chris, I never got a public apology from Rob when I was in New York.
Right? apologies are in the air,
that's
Kyrie.
Right.
Go ahead.
All right, Stu. I'm sorry that I ripped you when I was writing, because usually when I'm writing, I'm ripping. All right. Thanks, Stu.
All right.
And remember to check out his podcast, Everything Basketball. You can download it on iTunes. Thanks, Stu.
You got it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
DeMarcus Cousins, who will make his season debut in Golden State tomorrow night, he says that, Patriots aren't the most hated team. It's us, the Golden State Warriors. Here's the sound.
We're the most hated team in sports, so...
You think you're the most hated team in sports?
I
would say that there are a lot of people in this country who love to hate the Yankees or the Cowboys.
Put us up there. I would say the Warriors are for sure. You know, they hate Kevin. They hate me. I think the only guy they really like is Steph. They may hate him as well. They hate Draymond. But, I mean, it is what it is. So I can't worry about that.
That was courtesy of ESPN, DeMarcus Cousins, who, again, making his season debut tomorrow in the starting lineup for the Golden State Warriors as they play the Clippers tomorrow night. He told that to Rachel Nichols.
There's
no way that the Golden State Warriors are the most hated team in sports.
No. People don't like what went on and what they did when they put that team together. But, Chris, if you had to put together a list, I got four names. Four teams.
That are above them? Or
just... No, just four. I have them included. I have them as number four.
Okay.
I have three other teams ahead of them that I think people hate more.
Okay.
So, and if you wanted to.
I think I agree.
So let me give you my list, or you want to write them down? In your order.
I know they're the same.
They're the same. So go ahead. You know what three I'm talking about.
Right.
Right? So write them down. And I might put Notre Dame as number five. No? Like nationally.
Maybe.
All right.
Could be Bama.
It could be Alabama. All right. So we got the four. Warriors, we're both saying, right? Or number four?
Right.
Okay. Give me your other three. Give me number three. Go ahead.
Dallas. Well, this isn't in order, but New England, Dallas, and the New York Yankees. New England Patriots, Dallas Cowboys, New York Yankees.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Those teams are ahead. And I'll say currently, I think the Patriots are the most hated team in the country.
I agree.
I really do.
I think. Historically, you would say the Dallas Cowboys are the most beloved and the most hated at the same time in the NFL. But right now, it's definitely the New England Patriots. I think the New England Patriots are not only the most hated team in the NFL, most hated team in sports.
And I think the Yankees fell off. They still hate it. Don't get me wrong.
Right. 'Cause
you know that.
Right.
But they got like Judge and some players that are cool and aren't. Do you know what I mean?
Well, and also, they haven't won since 2009.
Right, and it's been a while.
In fact, they haven't, in the last 19 years, they've won and been to one World Series.
In 19 years?
19 years. Their last one was 2001.
2001, when they won a 3 out of 5. 3 out of 4, right.
Was it 3? Yeah, 3 out of, they went back and lost.
Right, and lost, right. They lost in 2002.
Okay, so 2002.
But wait a minute.
But since 2002.
Yeah.
They haven't won any other World Series.
Yeah.
So you have, that's what you have to understand.
Like you got
the Cowboys haven't won since 95.
Right.
So you have a whole nother generation that's like, I don't think that much about the Cowboys.
Right, because they're never in the playoffs
and
they don't win. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's different to the Cowboys.
It's teams that win a lot where you just go like, and that was the same thing. I tell people all the time, like, there's a revisionist history when people think about the Bulls. Everybody wasn't on Michael Jordan's bandwagon when that was going on. Did they
I do think they were unique.
I was covering during that time.
Yeah, I didn't start covering until 95.
Okay, I covered during the time early on, and there was a lot of people that hated Michael Jordan and the Bulls. And also,
well, the Pistons. You were in Detroit?
No, no, no.
Okay, but I was in the Pistons,
in Detroit. But I was in New York.
Okay,
and
New York too.
But there was another rival because they were in the way. Right. But I just remember that it wasn't all the love. People used to say, "Hey, Michael Jordan, he's only a dunker. He doesn't make anybody better."
Well, that was before he won.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
But once he started winning, people didn't feel that. And I would this is my opinion. Now, I want to hear yours too. Your response to it. In New York, of course, because the Knicks were good with Patrick Ewing.
Right.
And the Bulls kept beating them. And in Detroit, where they kept beating the Bulls, but then, of course, Jordan
then
ended
they finally
up
broke through.
Toppling them. He was very much hated.
Hated.
But I would say in most of the country, the Bulls and Jordan were beloved.
I don't know. There were people, I think they wanted to see, and this is what I used to always say at Madison Square Garden, covering those games. Knicks fans wanted to see Michael Jordan show out. They did. But they wanted the Knicks to win the game. They wanted Michael to have a big night, dunks.
Right.
But they wanted the Knicks to win. There was never like they're cheering for the Bulls to win the game.
Well, and I think it was probably like that in most, if not all, NBA arenas. Like, you know, diehard fans are going to pull for their team.
Right.
And when they went to see him play in Phoenix, I'm sure they wanted him to go ahead and get 40,
and
50
do his
points,
thing.
But the Suns win.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of talking about, you know,
I don't know if it's casual fans, or just general. And we didn't name them in there, so I agree that they didn't fit into where when we talk about.
Yeah, right, historically.
But I will say the Warriors are up there even more so than the Bulls during that time. But definitely, it's the Patriots. And it's the Patriots, not just, you know, people in Boston, fans are just jealous because we win all the time. And it's not just that. Because I think there's a part of it that people can't also get past of the cheating scandals.
Right. I agree with you.
That's part of it. It's not like you're not good enough just to win.
Right.
Because I always say Tom Brady should be like Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter won 5 championships, played 20 years with the Yankees, had a crystal clear record. Tom Brady doesn't have that. And I think that that's the part that people look at it. That's why you can't fully embrace them. There's something that doesn't feel right about the Patriots.
The cheating doesn't really come into my thinking when I think about the Patriots. And I do think it does for a lot of people. So I agree. It's not just the winning, obviously, bothers people.
Right, after a while.
But it's also the cheating.
It is. It's a combination.
Yeah, there's no question about it. They're kind of like, we've said it. They're the Spurs of the NFL. And the Spurs, I don't know if they're hated. They've got a little more color than the Spurs.
Spurs weren't hated at all.
No, because they were so vanilla,
Vanilla, right? And their big stars wearing sandals and flip-flops.
They were a dull. They were a dull team.
And they never won two in a row. Also, like when you talk about dynasties, you got to win at least
back-to-back
or 3 in a row for somebody to be at, or 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4, something like that.
Why do you think... And we want to open it up to you. 877-99 on Fox, 877-996-6369. Who do you think is the most hated team in sports? Or is it the Warriors? Give us a call. But why do you think the Warriors are definitely the most hated team right now in basketball? Part of me, I got to be honest, Rob, part of me feels like hated is actually a little strong. I would say most disliked. I don't feel like they're hating. I think everybody in the league, there are teams that players that don't like Steph, you know, the teams obviously are envious of their success. I feel like hated is a little strong.
Maybe, but there's a big dislike. Like there are people who don't want to see the Warriors win. You know, like the end of the... Like, when they got... I remember so many fans on social media were going crazy when they picked up Boogie Cousins. I'm done with the NBA. I don't want to watch this anymore. You know what I mean?
But like, I don't think they've become more hated since Boogie. I think the key thing was obviously Durant.
Yeah, no doubt about it, but they haven't seen Boogie with them yet. You don't even know.
Good point. If Boogie comes out, if they run off 20 in a row,
people will be like, oh, that's a great point. This is ridiculous. I can't stand this team. I can't believe they picked up Boogie because we haven't seen him with them.
That's a great point. You're right. If he comes
and fits in perfectly,
if he fits in perfectly, there's no stopping.
There's no stopping
them. They're going to run through everybody. You're right. That's a great point that I think they would be more hated then.
Yeah.
Like I said, I think they're disliked.
Okay, that's
fair. I don't feel like, because I think, look, a lot of people, there are those that don't like Steph. But a lot of that's people in the league. And I don't know if they, I wouldn't say they don't like, but, you know, a lot of players feel like, look, he doesn't play D. He doesn't, it's not only that he's not a good defender. Because, heck, Damian Lillard, Kyrie.
There's a lot of, right.
A lot of these big-time point guards aren't good defenders. Harden. But Steph, a lot of them feel like he doesn't even take up the challenge of guarding the opposing point guard if he's a really good point guard.
Right.